This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 402, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
A lot of folks said that I wouldn't be here tonight, but I made it.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 402. It's a start of a whole new era. My name is Paul Montgomery, and joining me, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And this week's special guest host, Mr. Ryan Haupt.
Hello.
Josh is traveling. He did not give up.
Yeah, Josh.
Everybody's you're jumping ship. The podcast is going to last. We are very much, we're invested.
Josh is just on the road.
It's just horrible timing.
The boy with his finger in the dam.
Yeah. Josh is doing his Willy Loman right now.
Yeah. We are iFanboy and we like comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics. And one of us picks the best book that they read. We call that the pick of the week. And we talk about it on this year's podcast, along with other books of the week, various other topics of interest, and other goofy nonsense. Before we get to the show, a word of caution. This is a review show. We will be talking about the things that happen in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, it's a good time to pause the show. Come back when you're ready for us. We'll be here.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
You were supposed to have read.
Yeah, you had homework, buddy.
You don't count.
Shoot. All right.
So this is interesting. unless you, I guess, it was in the URL. You know what it is already, but it's sort of a surprise. This week, Connor had the pick. What was it, buddy?
Batman Black and White number one was the pick, and as I got the response from Ryan when I sent out the information to the two guys, Ryan said no big surprise. Yeah. But I was kind of surprised. This Batman Black and White is the return of a miniseries that DC first did many years ago, in which they took sort of high-end talent that maybe didn't work on regular DC books and let them do Black and White Batman stories, as the title would tell you. And that spawned also an interesting statue line, of which I have one of my only statue purchases. I bought one of those Batman. I have the Frank Quietly, Dick Grayson Batman statue.
Very good. I want the Sean Murphy one that came out recently.
Well, speaking of Sean Murphy, in this issue, I didn't really know anything about this book. I didn't do any research on it. I didn't know who was working on it. I just knew it was Batman Black and White, so I'd be picking it up, and had a pretty cool Mark Silvestri Batman cover.
Who was the colorist on this issue, Connor?
Jerk. there's probably some grayscale working here. Anyway, so I opened up the issue, and much to my surprise, I saw names like Chip Kidd and Neil Adams and Joe Quinones and Sean Murphy and Chris Samnee, and I went, oh boy, because I didn't have any idea what to look forward to. I didn't have any expectations set, but once I saw those names, I knew I was in for a fun ride. But I didn't know it was going to be the pick until page 1, 2, 3, I believe. No, 4.
Okay.
In the first story, it's basically a Silver Age throwback done in an art style very similar to Dick Sprang. And features, and all of these stories feature the old versions of the characters, the pre-New 52 versions.
Mm-hmm.
And it features Batman and young Dick Grayson Robin, and Batman's gone missing. and Dick can't find him anywhere, including there's a great shot of him doing a handstand on a chimney, which is very reminiscent of the old Batman comics when he would always do acrobatics.
Yeah.
And Dick is sad because Batman's gone missing and he can't find him, and Superman shows up and says, "Chin up, son, we'll find him." And that's when I went, this is probably going to be the pick.
Some weird stories in here, to be honest. I mean, there's
there's some really oddball shorts. That's what I love about it. You can totally put Batman through the oddball ringer and it works. I mean, the first story is my favorite one. It was Superman and Robin having to rescue Batman.
So he got teleported to Korea?
Teleported to Korea by the Joker.
And they had to go find him.
Yeah.
I was like, all right.
And then I really loved the Neil Adams story, which is probably the weirdest story. And
you're going to have to defend that one to me.
Okay, one of the reasons I really loved it was for the art, because, you know, most of these stories are just black and white, but they're finished, you know, they're inked. This is basically Neil Adams' raw pencils without any ink on them, and they're just gorgeous.
Except the word balloons.
Right, obviously.
Which is a little jarring, but I don't know if there's a happy answer to that.
I've always been a huge fan of seeing the uninked art. I love seeing how intricate the work is. And it's gorgeous.
Amount
of detail. And the story is Zombie Batman, who I also love that it's basically a throwback to Neil Adams' work in the 70s, in which there was a lot of social commentary in comics. So in this story, Batman is fine when he's up against like the villains, up against the Riddler or the Joker. He's regular Batman. But when he's up against social problems like house foreclosures and things like that, he turns into Zombie Batman because he basically can't do anything about it. And it turns out...
You didn't think that was a bit heavy-handed?
Oh, absolutely heavy-handed.
I mean, it's like a political cartoon.
Have you read Green Arrow, Green Lantern? It's one giant heavy-handed social commentary. I mean, that's
But what... like, so I felt like there was the story with Howard Mackey and Chris Omni, the last story in the book, that also had like balancing the Bruce Wayne social crusader versus the Batman, you know, crime crusader.
Yes.
And I felt like that just did a bit better job of handling.
It was a bit more subtle. Well, they're trying for different things, but yeah. I mean, even if you compare it to, you know, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, I mean, that's not a visual metaphor. I mean, this is like,
right.
It's like an Uncle Sam kind of thing. It's like, you know,
it's weaker.
And it's gorgeous. And I love that it's just pencils.
I love that it's really bizarre. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, I kind of like that it's just
wacky. I like that Alfred and Bruce often talk about Bruce's dreams. I just like that that's
Alfred
a common part
a
of their
dream journal. He does use it all logged just in case.
I really enjoyed the Joe Quinones one. Mm-hmm. And I'm blanking on the it's a female writer.
Maris Wicks.
She's also an artist, and she's a very good artist.
And it's sort of a return to Batman the Animated Series kind of vibe with Harley and Ivy, because I'm thinking Holly and the Ivy. That's one of the episodes. Because
Holly is a plant.
Yeah, and so you know, Harley's got her pet hyenas, which I always loved, and they get bloated eating weird mutated soy burgers, and she thinks that it's all Poison Ivy's fault, and you know, a lot of misunderstandings, and that's a fun one.
Anybody who eats a soy burger deserves whatever they get.
Sure. And then I was thrilled to see the return of Roxy Rocket, one of my favorite characters of all time. Kind of a minor role in the Murphy one.
This was the John Arcudi, Sean Murphy one. This is my favorite. So it's interesting that each of us had different favorites.
Well, I didn't, you know, that's up there for me.
But I also loved that one. I mean, this is a great story too. Driven, it's basically a car guy.
Literally driven.
Where Bruce is telling the story of a car chase he's going on with Roxy Rocket, and as he fixes the Batmobile, and I love the little reveal at the end. It turns out there was nothing wrong with the Batmobile. He just hit it with the wrench to have the excuse to take it apart.
So he gets to fiddle with it.
He damaged the fender in order to have the excuse to take the car apart and fiddle with it. And it was just a fun story.
Because we don't often see Batman the Tinkerer.
No, but he is. He's the guy who built all this stuff.
Right.
They've had stories in the past where he's like hired, you know, people to help maintain all the equipment and stuff like that. But
90s.
Yeah.
No, it's true. But he is. I mean, he's the guy who designed all these things and built them. So, you know, he can do it. And it's always fun to see him sort of return to like, he's clearly quite passionate about the Batmobile and what it can do.
It's a great Batmobile design. And, you know, Roxy Rocket is usually riding a rocket, but in this, she's in this
hot rod.
Hot rod, yeah.
Great Sean Murphy art. I mean, just
really nice.
He draws a good Bruce.
It's an artistic tour de force, this whole issue.
Yeah.
And I mean, no matter what you think of the stories, it's between all the artists in this are great.
And there's going to be more.
That, Do you guys notice that Joe Quinones, his Batman's eyes glow?
Yeah.
Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there's like a close-up in one of the panels, I think, and you just see, it's like it's glowing. It's like bioluminescent. Pretty cool.
Or like that scene in Dark Knight with the glowing white eyes.
Oh, yeah, it was like that.
And honestly, my least favorite story, although I still enjoyed it, was the final one, the Chris Somni art Howard Mackey story. I liked it, but I didn't love it. Like, I loved the other stories. I loved them. But it was okay. Like, it was fine. It was a good story, but it didn't blow my socks off.
This is weird. We got two ventriloquist stories this week. And
yes.
That was one of them. I love the ventriloquist, the classic. I mean, he's great in small doses,
mm-hmm.
But a really fun character. And I think there's, you know, a bunch of cool short stories out there about that guy. And they've, you know, we see the New 52 debut this week, but right. Even in recent years, they've had other versions, like female versions of the ventriloquist and Scarface. But it's a cool character. I like that story.
It's a good looking story. I'm just flipping through the pages right now, and it's, you know, if there's a couple of guys that aren't drawing Batman that are meant to draw Batman very well, it's Somni and Sean Murphy.
And it's also a treat to see these guys in black and white.
Yes.
I love seeing Somni in Daredevil, but I think the stuff that he does with light and shadow, like,
yes.
I mean, early on, sort of, somebody talked to him and he mentioned that it was about he sees the shadows first.
Well, if you've ever seen him draw at a convention, he draws, you know, he draws very sort of backwards.
Right.
And what I mean by that is he draws the negative space instead of the positive space, which, and backwards is a negative connotation, but he does the sort of the opposite of what most
artists do. He does the value drawing.
Yeah, and it's so amazing to watch. And I remember first seeing him or first recognizing him as a name when he did one of those Vertigo black and white crime books with Christos Gage, I think, was the writer on
that one. Yeah. Is that the screwdriver?
The screwdriver thing. That was weird, but that was the first time I really saw as an artist and went, oh, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And that was the same kind of thing where it was very black and white heavy and moody.
It feels like a million years ago and like last week at the same time.
But I love short stories like this. I love getting to play with them. I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy the digital books so much. We'll talk about those later. But I love having different people sort of get to play with the characters. Batman's very versatile as a character who can sort of fit in any kind of genre. From a Silver Age tale to a car chase scene to a weird zombie dream to a black and white noir story to a sort of fun romp with Harley Quinn. He can, you know, the characters fit in all those really well. And it's just from the cover on through, it's a beautiful looking book.
I'm really glad that they're doing this.
It was also one of my favorites. I don't know why I don't own the collections, but I love the original ones. And so I'm glad it's back, and I'm hoping for some, you know, this is a great kickoff issue, and hopefully it's a sign of what's to come for the whole mini, because they're all, you know, different stories. They're not continuing on or anything like that. So we'll see what comes up next. I really did like the surprise of not knowing. You know, it's one of the benefits, and I don't want to harp on it too much. One of the benefits of not doing the website this week was, you know, normally I would know who all the creative team did from doing the comics page, and I didn't know who was coming up, and it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, it's a little unruly this week because it was also the debut of Forever Evil, and there's like a bazillion...
let's get into that. Now, we had it was a weird week in that you had three major events happening. So you had Forever Evil kicking off, which is DC's real event, as opposed to Trinity War, which turned out to just be a prologue to the main event, which is Forever Evil. Then you had Infinity continuing on with the second issue, which is Marvel's main event. Then you had a little sub-event, Battle of the Atom, kicking off in the X-Men books. So a lot of event books this week. And Forever Evil basically had... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 or 16 tie-in issues, basically all of the DC comics this week. And I really enjoyed the issue of Forever Evil, but I thought most of the tie-ins are pretty lackluster.
I honestly didn't like Forever Evil number one.
Well, you've turned on Jeff Johns.
And no, I haven't. Like. No. I came in with an open mind.
You haven't had a good thing to say about him in years.
No. I like the Shazam story in the back of Justice League. I'm looking forward to reading that all collected. But I went in with an open mind. I'm not a huge Finch fan. It was a bit messy looking. My problem with Forever Evil is that it's all evil, over the top, in your face. Everybody is super evil, evil, evil. And there's like no shades of gray.
Do you think the rogues are all that super evil?
Well,
they seem to be sort of stuck in the middle of the situation.
The rogues are special.
But I mean, they're kind of the gray area characters, right? I mean,
but even now, I mean, they're still less nuanced than they were before.
Sure.
I think that there was more going on with their morality prior to their, you know, their reboot. But no, but it's, you know, is it Ultraman?
Mm-hmm.
Ultraman moving the moon to create, you know, this eclipse and to, you know, block out the sun. And so that the
really
Justice League is
really not a long-term solution because of the orbit.
He doesn't seem like he's a long-term thinker.
No. Yeah.
Well, it you know, it makes you wonder how long does this story take place? You know what I mean? Like in you know.
Right. Well, we'll find out. I mean, the if you haven't reading it or didn't read Trinity War, hear us talk about it. Basically, the Trinity War ended with the Earth 3 characters who are the crime syndicate characters, the evil version of the Justice League, coming through a boom tube type, the Pandora's box, which was like a boom tube, and coming to Earth. And so something has happened to all the heroes. They plan to be all dead, and they've taken over Earth. So that's the first evil. That's why all the villains have taken over all the super, the books for the month.
So here's the thing. I read Forever Evil. I did not read a single one of the tie-ins, and I don't care. Like, nothing about the story makes me care.
Well, then the good news for you is you can save some money this month and skip over all the DC books.
I mean, I guess so, but I was disappointed in that. Like, I literally, you know, went to the shop digitally and saw that all of the titles, the number of titles that I still were interested in with DC had been taken over by the villains, and I just said, well, I don't need that issue. I don't care.
Well, you don't. And one of the things, even if you did care, which is one of the problems I had, is it was such a mishmash in terms of what the tie-ins were. And I think I read 4 or 5 of them.
But that was why I didn't care. Like, I didn't really... I only read the Justice League book for Trinity War, meaning I didn't get any of the story of Trinity War. I got the beginning and the end.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Earth 3 shows up, and I'm just thinking to myself, I don't care. I just couldn't muster up any sort of emotion towards wanting to be a part of this story. And I felt bad about that. And honestly, when I saw all the covers with all the villains on them the first time, you know, a few weeks ago, I thought it was a joke. Like, I didn't think that they would actually do that. And then they did.
But then in the past, DC is really fond of doing, like, takeover events where the books all change for the month.
There were like 0.1 issues, right?
Yeah, they followed Marvel. I mean, they just keep following each other to the worst places, and they're all, right, all 0.1 issues. And you can just skip them if you don't want to be involved in the event. But, Paul, I mean, the ones that you read, what I found interesting was that they had no cohesion in that one issue would be an origin story, one issue would be tied into the Forever Evil story, one issue would be kind of to the side. Like, it didn't really seem like there was a cohesive editorial reason for these stories.
Yes, you know some. I mean? Yeah, no, I agree. Some of the stories do touch on, like, the Forever Evil, like the modern day plot, right. and then one that I read, the Deadshot one, which is actually fairly decent. That's Matt Kent with the present day art by Sammy Basri, and then a ton of different pencilers and inkers on the past story. You come for Sammy Basri, though. Really great stuff. And that's kind of a cool origin story. And apparently that's continuing on in – and that one's taking over – that's Justice League of America 7.1.
Right.
And then Suicide Squad will be part 2 of that story.
Right. I assume that most of these will continue on in some fashion. Like, Justice League was a Dark Side origin story, yes, which I guess will continue on in that Dark Side will show up. But, like, you know – I just didn't get. I didn't get a sense that there was a reason for these books other than to do them. You know what I mean? And not in a. It doesn't matter, so it's not important. Reason. I just mean in a. What is the point? Is the point to tell villain origin stories? And okay, then do that. Or is the point to tie into the main story? Okay, then do that. But they all just sort of did their own thing.
I think the loose rubric for it is it's a showcase for the character in some way.
Okay,
and it tells you more about those characters. And but I agree with you. Even compared to, like, you know, last year when it was all zero issues, that was, you know, it was what happened before the first issue. And so that makes, you know, kind of sense. And this, though, yeah, I don't entirely know the direction on it. And it just sort of do what you feel like doing.
They were also almost all random creative teams, except for of the ones I read, Green Arrow, which was a Count Vertigo origin story told by the regular team of Jeff Lemire and Sorrentino,
which looked lovely, and that's it. And I think that's an interesting reboot of that character, an interesting vision of the character. I didn't entirely love the script. I thought it was kind of by the numbers.
There's a lot of super wordy ones. This one, there were the ones of the ones I read. There's a lot of text heavy, books.
But of the ones, the ones that I liked, that Deadshot one would probably be my top one. I thought the Darkseid one was for Justice League 23.1 was kind of interesting. That's Greg Pak and Nathan Diaz. And it's the origin story of Darkseid. And
but also of the New Gods, too.
Of the New Gods, yeah. And that was kind of interesting. And I don't know how much lore there is for Darkseid, but...
There's some, and I'm not super up on all of it. I've always just like not knowing too much about him. But
it sort of goes with that Thanos Rising thing. Like, I don't know that I want to know, but you know, if you're cool with there being an origin for Darkseid and going in it before he was Darkseid, I think it was pretty well done. And it's, you know, Darkseid killing a bunch of gods and you know, sort of shades of Gore the God Butcher, but it was pretty good. So I'd recommend that one and the Deadshot if you're interested. But ultimately,
if you're not, like, if you're like Ryan, you don't care, then you can just skip this month of DC books.
Yeah, but if you're like, I want to try some
load
of
off
these,
your wallet.
Those would be my recommendations.
I feel bad. I don't want to be the guy skipping. I just nothing they've done made me care.
Let's flash back a second to the animated Brain Trust which we were all on, and we talked about the film in which the Crime Syndicate starred. Did you enjoy that film? I don't remember.
It was entirely forgettable, which is why you don't remember.
You just don't know. Well, I don't remember your opinion. I remember how I thought about the film.
What did you think about the film?
I enjoyed it.
It was one of their better ones.
One of the best ones. It was the James Woods one.
I thought it was forgettable.
I think you just don't like the characters.
Wait, is the Crime Syndicate one, are we talking about Justice League Doom, or are we talking about Justice League Crisis on Two Earths?
Two Earths.
Two Earths was great. The Doom one, which was also a Crime Syndicate, well, it wasn't, it was like a Luthor, you know, society.
Well, that's evil. Different. We're talking about the one that their evil counterparts.
No, James Wood is Owlman all day, every day. I'm sold.
That's more interesting because those villains that crime syndicate, they feel like they're superpowered criminals. They just feel like a crime syndicate. Whereas this is more like a Legion of Doom where they're just bad mustache twirling.
Well, my problem is we're introducing this Ultraman person and we're learning a lot about him. He hates the sun. He snorts kryptonite like crack.
I kind of liked that.
It was fine, but my problem is in the New 52, I still don't feel like they've established who and what Superman is.
We're going to get to that in an email later on, but or perhaps as a voicemail. But I think there's a foundational problem to the New 52, which sort of infects almost all of these books.
Right, so you can't say here's the counterpart to Superman, and I'm like, great, I don't know who Superman is though.
Right, no, that's the problem. I think what I do at this point now is I start reading it in the mind of being in the old place, and not because I was one of those people that was angry when they switched over, just because it's been such a disaster in the way they've handled it that I just, you know, I go back, I've gone back in time.
Well, what do you?
But that's
why
I really like the Adventures of Superman and Batman Black and White, because it's like, yes, just they put the shorts back on and all of a sudden it makes sense again.
Well, I think as a whole, the digital stuff is much better creatively. But let's move on to the next.
Wait. Shouldn't we talk about the big moment?
We can. Yes, quickly though. We got two more
Forever
events.
Forever Evil. Just no. I wanted your thoughts on that. That's all.
You know,
what are you guys classifying as the big moment?
The big moment of the story is that Dick Grayson's identity is revealed to the world.
Oh yeah.
If it hadn't been spoiled online, I probably would have been more shocked by it.
But as a story beat, how do you feel about it?
It didn't, it sort of came out of nowhere.
Okay.
I mean, it's okay. The fallout will be, I guess, the biggest test of the moment will be what the fallout is and how that actually affects the character and the world. But, you know.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
See, it wasn't spoiled online for me, and I read it and I'm just like, oh, that was, I mean, because, you know, it's, there's that whole thing where Dan DiDio tried to kill Dick Grayson, and I'm like, well, I guess this is the next best thing.
He's gonna kill him without killing him.
Right. You're gonna neuter him, essentially.
All right. So the next big Infinity 2 came out this week, which is the big Avengers Marvel event. Jonathan Hickman this week, drawn by Jerome Opeña. So it was absolutely gorgeous. But I found myself way more disconnected to the story than I was last time. I was.
Really? Okay.
If you recall last time, Paul and Mike Romo and I talked about the first issue, and for half of that issue, I was really disconnected, and I got into the second half. I sort of thought I figured it out, but this issue I felt more like a overview or an outline of a story than an actual story.
Okay. So wait, is Joss just avoiding talking about Infinity?
Yes, I think that's what's going to happen.
He's going away. I continue to like this, and I sort of had to adjust my expectations about it after the first issue. Like, when I first read it, I was like, I don't know. I think one of our notes was that, like, it's you're not really in the characters' heads too much because there's so much going on, and yeah, it does kind of feel...
It'll be fine, which can be totally fine.
Yeah, and I've come to terms with that, and that's sort of how I'm enjoying it, is that it's such a big story, and it's such a, you know, there's such a huge scope, and it is a space opera. And we say the same thing about Saga, but that's a very different kind of space opera, and it's much more intimate. That's
opera.
Character-based. This is big. It's big ideas, big plot, and some of it is going over my head. Some of the world building he's doing, like with the Ex Nihilo stuff. I'm not big on that stuff, and I'm not like in the Captain Universe, like that's a little bit too spacey for me, but I love the alien stuff. Like,
I just wish there was 25% less story so that we could spend some time in the actual scenes we got.
Well, so the cool, you know what I mean? So let's talk about some things that actually happen. So the big thing is the Corvus Glaive, and there's a bunch of proper names I don't remember. That's the scary looking dude who's a lieutenant for Thanos.
This is like when I tried to read War and Peace and couldn't remember anybody's names because they're all long and Russian.
Right, here's my thing. Like, I'm not trying to sound like an ass, but as with Forever Evil with Infinity Number 2, I just don't care.
Okay.
There's no emotion in this. Like Connor said, it's just story beats. And
but it's not even. But it just reads like an outline. You'd have one panel where they're doing something, and the next panel they're off somewhere else, and you're like, wait a minute, what happened in between? Like, you know, it's. I just wish there was a little bit less so we could spend a little bit more time with what was actually happening.
Are you?
And so I actually did like the part with the Inhumans in Attila, but the fact that I didn't even remember the name of the character that precipitated the event, I think, says something. Like the fact that Paul says Corvus Glaive, and I literally didn't know who he was talking about. I wasn't being flip. It was just, I didn't.
Okay, are you
remember.
Just, let me ask, are you just reading Infinity, like Infinity 1 and 2, or
yes.
Are you reading Avengers?
Yes. Just Infinity.
I dropped all the Avengers books.
Okay, well, it helps to read Avengers and New Avengers.
But I don't care.
Then you don't have to. I'm just saying there are people out there listening who do care, and I'm one of them. So I think you get more of the character stuff in Avengers and New Avengers. It zeroes in on specific groups and specific conflicts, whereas Infinity is more of a macro. And you're getting a look at the, you know, it's a battle on multiple fronts, and there's a bunch of stuff happening out on the edge of the solar system, and then there's Thanos coming to Earth and his various lieutenants going to like Wakanda, and you got to see that in New Avengers, which was really cool. You only see it like a snippet of that here. So I would recommend that you do, for people who care, who find this at least tantalizing, go check out Avengers and New Avengers, and it just feels like one larger story.
What's interesting is that this book takes itself so seriously that they can't do like the editorial insert. And I honestly believe that if in the Battle of Wakanda, if there'd been the asterisks and there'd been the little editor's box that said, to see more of this battle, check out New Avengers, whatever, I honestly might have.
But he's got the infographic in the back. He's got the thing. He's got all the nodes and stuff. And
But by the end, I'm so totally disinterested. Got to get me in the middle.
All right. So
this is your fault.
This is a losing battle. You don't care, but I find
it. Here's what I know.
I want to care.
Okay.
The Jerome Pena pages were gorgeous.
Yes, they were.
The last bit was just Dustin Weaver, who did Shield, is also good. But the Jerome Pena pages were just wonderful. Even Iron. No, I won't go that far. Not Iron Man's armor. But
no. that's a bad design. They need to move
it's
on
a
from
really
that.
Bad decision, but. It was great looking. I want to like the story. I want to believe, Paul. I want to have a poster on my dorm room wall that says, I want to believe. I want to be with you.
Okay.
I'm sticking with it. But if you want to talk about an event that I'm loving, Battle of the Atom. We got the first two chapters in 1 week.
Yeah, I'm with you on Battle of the Atom.
X-Men Battle of the Atom number one, and then All New X-Men 16 is part two. And this is the culmination of the last sort of year. I don't even know. How long have these books been coming out? I can't tell anymore because of the numbering. But
it's probably also, like, not even that long.
We'll say the last month and a half they've been coming
out.
Say,
yeah, 3 weeks.
The last Bendis era of culminating the Bendis era of the X-Men books, in which the problem of having the young X-Men from the 60s in the present has come to a head. And
don't say the 60s, just the young X-Men.
That's where they're
the
from.
First
they're
class.
From the 60s.
All right.
So in the first part, I loved both parts. I loved,
yes.
And these are probably the closest to beating Batman Brick League with either one of these issues, but
okay,
which is crazy when I think about it. But
well, this was one of those where I opened All New X-Men 16 first because I'm a big fan of All New X-Men.
It's on the cover.
Yeah, part two. What number it is on the cover.
I know, but I missed it on the cover, but I recognized immediately that I was in the middle of something, and I skipped to the very end because I was like, I know Marvel. Marvel's going to put a checklist in here for me. And I was right. There was a checklist, and then I went and read Battle of the Atom first.
Okay. This is what I knew I was in, much like the Superman page. It was the page when... So in this story, as we all know, the Beast has brought the young X-Men to the present to see what they have wrought as adults, so hope that they will go back and fix
stuff
things
from Schism, where
right, and how much of a dick Cyclops is. And so then, in this issue, they realize no, we actually should send them back because this is a whole big paradox problem.
Because Cyclops dies.
Well, yeah, because briefly the young Cyclops dies, so the old one blinks out of existence, just like in Back to the Future.
And then, unfortunately, one of the new mutants brings him back to life. So, we're this close.
So they realize, okay, we should probably get these guys out of here before something bad happens. So then as they're getting ready to do that, the time cube activates itself and the door opens. And I have to say, the page turn in which you didn't know who was coming through the cube, I was probably more excited than I had been in a long time reading a comic because I'm just so into this story.
Yeah.
And it's revealed to be the X-Men from the future. So now you've got three eras of X-Men, and I just went, yes, I'm in. This is awesome.
I mean, this week had a lot of time... transport devices activating from other times. This was a heavy theme this week. It's one of those things where it's like sometimes a creator will have three or four books come out in the same week.
Not sometimes.
And this week, and this week was the week of time travel happening unexpectedly because somebody's coming at you from another time.
Yeah, right. And I like that it's like a whole, it's like a new group of, future X-Men too. It's not the usual suspects and stuff.
Yeah, you got some interesting people.
And I love all the character designs. I love horned, claw-footed Beast.
He just keeps evolving.
He can't stop.
And it looks like Iceman is going through the same thing.
Yep.
Well, I feel like they hinted around the edges of Iceman. My prediction is that Bobby Drake died, and this ice monster is just a fragment.
Oh, you're right, because they never actually addressed that was Iceman. We're just assuming it was.
He keeps saying, "Is that me? I think that's me. That's me. That's weird."
But the thing has no intelligence, so I'm going with the idea that the Bobby, because he's been splitting himself into multiple ice.
Yeah, yes, that's a good observation, Ryan.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I love this. I'm all in. I can't believe I'm saying that about the group.
I think there's some really cool like character choices. Like they bring back this. So a couple cool ideas. Molly Hayes from Runaways.
Yep. Big. He's met literally like six times.
Bulked up, and that was a great scene. And I love the height difference between her and Wolverine. And then they have a Lady Zorn, and you might be rolling your eyes when you see Zorn. But then I love that they don't like drag it out. We find out in All New X-Men 16 that it's Jean.
Yeah.
So we have a past Jean, we have a future Jean, we're just missing a present Jean, which is kind of
like Rachel Gray.
Yeah, but isn't that her daughter?
Yeah, it's not her.
It's a daughter of an alternate universe Jean Grey.
Psychic Paul.
The point is, it's really fun and it's gorgeous. Stuart Immonen did the second issue, which I mean Frank showed it the first issue and it's fine. I like his art okay, but it was really all about Stuart Immonen's second issue, which he's wonderful. And I love the sort of mature role that Kitty... I mean, they kept saying Professor, and I kept going, where's is Xavier back? And then I realized they were calling Kitty that. And when you realize, circle all the way back to when Kitty first debuted and all the clashes she had with Professor, the culminating in the Professor Xavier's a Jerk panel, which has become a meme. It's interesting. Even more interesting than Wolverine's transformation to see Kitty sort of become the new Xavier.
One thing I also really liked in the issue was when Bendis likes to do the I'm going to show you the scene from the outside and then I'm going to show you the scene from the inside.
Yes,
it's
good which he does with kind of Jean's psychic powers, trying to scan everyone around her while the scene is taking place.
Yep.
And I really liked that young Hank McCoy is more interested in watching the scene play out than running off with Jean.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I liked that, they introduced this idea that Hank has always had a crush on Jean and Jean is willing to accept
that.
Yeah, have some fun with it.
But he's still a scientist and he wants to observe it.
And
when
think
push
she's
comes
all,
to shove, she says, Scott, we got to go. And Scott says, sure thing, let's go.
I think she's also saying, like, there's my death warrant has been signed by this, you know, these revelations over the past several weeks or whatever, however long this has gone on. And she knows that she's going to end up with Scott and then she's going to die. I think if that were me, I'd be like, I want to try exploring different avenues to try and avoid, you know, Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come.
You see a guy with big feet nearby and you just.
So I think there's a lot of great character stuff going on in these stories, along with the great art and just the great sort of fun story that's happening. So I think
the big question though, is it so Bendis did these first two chapters. Right. This is going to be in other X-Men books.
But only one other one. He's doing Uncanny also. He does Uncanny.
And then it's also in X-Men.
It's just Brian Wood. Oh, and Wolverine the X-Men. But and that's Wolverine Jason Aaron, X-Men, right. So we're going to be all right.
Yeah, so, you know.
I think all the creative teams in these books are good. And the good part for me is I buy all these books anyway, so.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is, who is Lady Zorn?
It's Jean.
Well, I mean, I thought I was supposed to be Josh, so I didn't finish any of the books.
Okay, there you go. Perfect. So, let's take a quick break to talk about Amazon. You can go to Amazon if you may have heard of them. They're a little startup company up in the Pacific Northwest who sell a lot of things or sell everything through their website. And you can go help us out by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon, clicking on the link and doing all your purchases that way. Or even better, taking that link, making it your bookmark. You never have to worry about it again. And maybe you forget about it and you're just doing it for years. It's a great way to help the site. We still have bills. We have server costs and all kinds of things like that to keep things going. And a little bit of your purchase comes back our way. Not doesn't come out of your wallet. It comes out of Amazon's hefty wallet, and it helps everybody out. So fanboy.com/Amazon is where you can go.
Remember Gumby? So, buy some Gumby merch.
Oh, Gumby was awesome.
Yeah.
See, Paul, you always give the example thing that they can go buy, and I had one ready, hoping I could cut you off, and you were too quick.
Is it more expensive than Gumby? Go.
It's much more expensive. You can buy crossbows on Amazon.
Buy crossbows.
That doesn't seem right.
You can buy a Arrow Precision Inferno Fury crossbow kit, 175 pounds.
You know that episode of The Simpsons where Homer gets a gun and he uses it to like turn the lights off and turn the TV? I would do that with a crossbow. I would just sit there on my couch and turn it.
Make Wookiee noises.
Exactly.
And this has like cool camo patterning on the crossbow, so you'll be hidden.
Don't email me. I know Chewie's is a bowcaster. No. Go ahead.
All right, so let's talk about Trillium number 2, the second issue of Jeff Lemire's maxi series or mini series, whatever you want to call it, from Vertigo.
Hey, my joke about not finishing things came back around.
I really loved this issue. I thought it was really charming.
Yes, it was really good.
It was basically, so we talked about the last issue in which Josh did not finish it by accident. It is
it was a flip book on the first issue.
Flip book where two characters met in the middle and you had to flip it over to read both their stories. And in this issue, they meet. But the problem is one is from Earth of the 20s. And the other is from the future. And the other is from the year 3070 something.
38th century, yep.
And so they don't speak the same language and they can't communicate. And it was a really fun back and forth as you got into each one of their heads as they try to understand each other and try to communicate using sticks and drawings in the dirt. And I just thought it was a great sort of meet cute. And it was really charming.
That's a great way of putting it. It's the big question last time was, well, I guess they're not going to do a flip book every month. So how are they going to keep it special? And this way it reads like a standard comic book, but there is that dynamic of some of the scenes you're seeing the words in the word balloons and you can read them in English. And then the other character is just dots. And so it's a great way of putting you in that character's perspective. And it's charming is a really good word for it. And I love that they have that they're lost in translation, but they commiserate over like her being a bad artist, not being able to do a good stick figure or something. So, and I love that the sort of, you know, last month, the culmination was those two, one upside down issue meeting the other one in the middle of the book. Here it was them both discovering this flower and both saying Trillium at the same time.
Right. So it's sort of structurally similar.
Yeah.
Let's see how he plays with that throughout the issues.
Cool sci-fi.
I really do like it. Ryan, are you reading it?
Yeah, I am reading it. And one thing I liked as a person who reads a good amount of sci-fi or has read a good amount of sci-fi is that so often the character from the future is the person who knows everything and is totally competent and capable, and the person from the past is the dolt.
Right.
Sure. And this book didn't rely on that. So there are things about this world where the character from 1921 is more competent and better at things than the character from 2337 or whatever year she's from. And I really liked that dichotomy that she's a normal person. She's not this super genius who's trying to interact with a primitive. They're both on equal footing just from different worlds. Even though it's the same world, it's Earth, it's just different times. Yeah. I like that.
It's really good. I'm really enjoying this so far. Two issues in. Now, what's the haps in Superior Spider-Man 17? We still got Doc Ock. What's happening?
Yeah. So I pointed out when we were planning the show this week that I'm still reading Superior Spider-Man. It doesn't get talked about very often. It's still Doc Ock. He's still working for Horizon. Max Modal just got arrested because of a former employee who's trying to do some corporate espionage. Liz Allen makes her return with Normie, Norman Osborn's grandson, son of Harry Osborn.
Right.
I haven't seen since the 90s. And now we're also introducing the Spider-Man of the future, Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099.
So how does he fit in? How does he show up?
It's the whole time, everything in time is messed up.
Accidental time cube again.
Right. So it's like with the Hulk, where everything in time is messed up now because of Age of Ultron. The issue starts in 2099, and the Spider-Man 2099 is sent to 2013 to fix all of the stuff that the modern age heroes have messed up.
Yeah, I love the fact that, I got to talk to Dan Slott about this a little while ago, and I love the idea that it's, they consider it the heroic age, right? Like it's like this epoch, the modern day stuff that we're reading all the time, that's the heroic age. And there's some kind of like cloud, there's some kind of interference between this time and the year 2099. And they don't, no, it's like some history was lost, but it's all because of like the present day. And Miguel O'Hara is like, oh man, they screwed up again. Like, what are they up to back there? I got to go back.
Yeah. So the issue ends with basically Miguel O'Hara and the Superior Spider-Man Doc Ock, coming into contact. And I guess the next issue is going to be the big misunderstanding fight between the two. So, The series, it feels like it's moving at a rip-roaring pace where things are just happening and cascading and everything is in motion. But when you actually sit back and think about it, like, the story has progressed slowly. Like, it actually is a slow burn towards this eventual build. And I don't even know what that build is going to be, but Dan Slott does manage to pack a lot into every issue. And it's, I don't know, it's a book I'm still really enjoying, even if Doc Ock is Spider-Man.
Now, Paul, let's talk about your favorite book. Satellite Sam 3 came out this week.
Smutty, smutty goodness.
Was this your pick, Paul?
I don't know if it was my pick. My trick, you know, my pick might be, it was probably Battle of the Atom that, you know. I probably would have asked, can I do like a, you know, a two-way tie for my pick of the week? And can we, you know, format it that way?
Ron killed that one. Six books. That was one pick many years ago. Before
it was six books. I vaguely remember. Okay. Anyway, Satellite Sam. We're learning more about Carlisle White, our main character's father, who died in the first issue, and you know he was the titular Satellite Sam, and he
got a little Bob Crane in him.
Little bit. What was that movie? With Greg
Autofocus.
Kinnear. Autofocus, yeah. It reminds me of that every time. So this is his son getting to know one of the women in one of those hundreds of photographs. And the wrinkle that we find out is that, and he's trying to figure out who murdered his father, because it's clearly foul play. And the new wrinkle by the end is that she says he only takes the girl's picture the first time that they make love, and which is probably not the right way to describe what they're doing. The first time they get busy.
Doesn't even like them.
Yeah, exactly. So but he only takes their picture once, and he sort of figures out through process of elimination that somewhere there is film of the woman that murdered his father.
Well, he also took movies, right? Because that's where the delivery is at the end.
Yeah, there's with kinescope stuff.
We think. We don't know.
So that was all great and fine, but my favorite sequence by far was so Eugene Ford is the engineer, and he's been trying really hard to sleep with this jazz singer for the last couple issues. Finally gets her back to the studio, and he accidentally discovers that if you point the camera at a monitor, you get a weird sort of feedback loop, and it totally captivates him to the point where he blows it with the singer. And I thought that was a wonderful bit.
I'm not going to lie. I got that. Like,
yeah, we understood. Ryan was on when we talked about when I made number one the pick of the week, and me and Josh were like, you know, connecting over it because of our media studies background, and Ryan's like, what the hell is this? So that's good. But yeah, when I was in high school and I was in the TV production homeroom, when you first discover that or have access to cameras to do that, you just get mesmerized by pointing a camera at a monitor and seeing all the trippy things it does,
especially in an era like this where they're new. So basically this is all unknown, so he's making discoveries every day, and he's the tinkerer. And as the little intro says, he's the guy who sees the future of TV better than anyone else. And I just love that he just completely diverted his attention, no longer cared about the Jazz Singer once he saw the feedback loop. And I thought that was a great bit of characterization, a wonderful little scene. And then, of course, he tries to recoup that, goes to the jazz club, gets thrown out. But it was, a smutty issue, but it was some great stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, in the covers, like, it makes it look like it's, you know, Black Kiss 3 or whatever. It's, you know, the next Chicken Smut Rag or whatever. But, like, there's some really fascinating storytelling going on, and it's a little bit Mad Men, a little bit not, but and a cool murder mystery too. So
yeah, I love this book.
Plus Mexican abortions,
some that go horribly wrong. So now Ryan, the most important question I have for you about Iron Man 15 is, does it feature the suit from Infinity 2?
So the great thing about Iron Man 15 is that it's an important part of the issue that he ditches the Space Knight suit and puts back on the black and gold armor.
Okay, good.
So for those of them following, Kieran Gillen and Greg Land are honestly killing it. Like, I think this book is criminally undersold in how good it is. Tony has been dealing with this rogue Rigelian recorder named 451, who has come across this armor called the Godkiller armor. It's like a a 5 mile tall suit of armor.
That's big.
That Tony was genetically programmed to be able to command. And so it's a lot of like retconning of the history of Tony Stark, but in a way that's really organic and fun, and just kind of, it deepens Tony as a character rather than making him more shallow. And so a lot of this issue was Tony trying to figure out how to outsmart this artificial intelligence in the Rigelian recorder that's way smarter than him. And it basically requires him using dumber technology rather than smarter technology, and having to fight him on that level. And inside this suit of armor, while the armor is heading at Earth, ready to destroy Earth, because his armor is so big and so powerful that if he even hits Earth, it'll blow it up. So the stakes are high. It's smart. It's intelligent. It's great, Tony Stark. I've really been enjoying it, and I hope other people are too. Even though you guys don't talk about it.
Speaking of artificial intelligence, though, I'm actually committed to, whenever I see an artificial intelligence in comics, and there are a lot of them, I'm trying to read it in the voice of James Spader. I'm trying to prepare myself and see what it's going to be like. It's a little fun exercise, so give it a shot.
So those are the books we want to talk about this week. Next week we'll have some more. I don't know what the transition for that segment is anymore. I didn't know what to say. I'm sorry. Those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Let's do some audience questions. How about that? That's a good segue. We got a whole bunch to get through. Kevin sent us an email, and Kevin says, I got into comic books a few years ago near the end of the Blackest Night run for DC, and I stuck to DC over any other selections. I've been listening to you guys for a few months now, and I'm beginning to feel a genuine distaste for anything DC from your thoughts on the different books. I was just wondering why exactly this is. Like I mentioned, I only pick up DC, and that's because it's what I'm familiar with. I feel like Marvel's too difficult to jump into. For someone like me, what would you suggest I do if I'm considering getting into Marvel? I hope you guys have gotten this far into the email after you saw the letters D and C.
That's a misconception. I mean, me and Connor traditionally were DC guys. Like, we love DC.
Yeah, huge
DC guys. This is a tough time.
It's a disappointment. It's not a distaste.
Yeah, and it's not like I'm relishing saying negative things about DC books, and I don't think of it as all of DC. I think there's plenty of great things going on, like a lot of the digital stuff, like Batman, like Wonder Woman. And it's just, I think you saying you came in at the end of Blackest Night, that's really kind of key. Because that's maybe the start of where it got like this.
No, I don't know if that's true. I think really it's the...
I think there was a really good time right before that. Not that there hasn't been great things
since
then.
That was sort of the end of the new golden age of DC, like the that started.
There's a plateau.
It started in the late 90s, and it went through that for about 10 years. That was a really good time for DC books for the most part. There's ups and downs, but for the most part, it was. That was the Geoff Johns era. That's where you had some great Batman stuff.
So it's just Green tricky Lantern. By comparison. Yeah. Like when I came in around 2006, so that was like Civil War time for over at Marvel. DC was great, and I was really digging a lot of the stuff, and that probably contributed to me being more of a DC leaning guy. And then I think it does have to do with like when you come in again as an adult, if you're coming back to it from childhood. I
love that we get an email saying that Marvel is too confusing to get into, because normally we get the opposite email. But the thing is, if you just jumped into the Blackest Night, DC at Blackest Night, which is how many years ago? 3 years ago or so?
3 or 4?
It would be no different than the startup with Marvel. It just, you know, you were learning a new world then, you just learn a new world now. And, you know, Marvel did a soft reboot, not really a reboot, but a restart with all the Marvel Now stuff, and it's only been about a year. So you could either try to catch up on a couple of those books that sound interesting, or you can just wait for the next wave of Marvel Now books, which we've all been told are coming soon. So, you know, you just jump in like you do with DC, and you learn as you go. It's not that difficult. And we talk about tons of great Marvel books all the time on the show, you know, Daredevil and Thor and
X-Men. Would you jump in on an event that tells you about the universe, or would you just jump in on like a, you know, a particular book?
Well, it sounds like
book?
He jumped in. No, he jumped at the end of Black Knight. And I don't know if I don't know. I wouldn't recommend any of these events to jump into.
No, but you know, just some Daredevil, some Hawkeye, some Thor, some
Young Avengers. There's also
Young Avengers is fantastic.
Hulk. I mean, there's all kinds of great Marvel books right now, and it's not. It's no more daunting to jump into those than it was daunting to jump into DC. I assume it was, unless you have some sort of prior knowledge of the characters.
I promise I'm not trying to name drop. I just want to give credit where credit's due. I talked with Kieran Gillen recently, and he pointed out that his Young Avengers is intended purposefully to mimic the original Avengers lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that I hadn't really put together before. And so the villains that they're facing are supposed to be mirrors for Ultron. And the team itself came together because of Loki. Even though Loki's kind of on the team, it's still he was the catalyst that brought the team together. So, like, it's 9 issues in. Just go pick it up. There's one trade out and then pick up the 3 issues after that. So Young Avengers has been a fantastic book. And it's relatively self-contained.
Yeah.
The you know, the typical advice is pick a character that you find compelling, that looks interesting to you, or maybe you have some history with from maybe a movie that you like or cartoons, whatever, and try it out. And if it's gonna stick, you'll find the stuff that you need, you know, to fill in the blanks. If it's not working out, then don't worry about it. Try something different.
Yeah.
Well, so Paul, if this guy got into Blackest Night, let's just assume for the sake of argument that he's a Hal Jordan fan. So where does a Hal Jordan fan go for Marvel? I would say Hawkeye, but what do I know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's by personality, but that then, and then maybe
I would say go
like the setting.
Trinova.
Trinova, right.
I mean,
Nova's.
It's a non so subtle Green Lantern ripoff, but yeah. You know, so, you know, there's lots of great, it's not daunting. I think there's a lot of fear, not just with Kevin, but just in general, because we get a lot of these emails saying, I want to try DC, but they're scary. You know, no one's going to die if you read a book and don't completely understand everything that's happening in it.
Try not to think about it as like a world. Try to think about like what characters you find interesting. And gradually you'll accrue more of them. You'll meet more of them in each book, and then you'll try their books out, and it'll happen.
Well, Nova's a great suggestion because that's a new character.
Yeah.
Yes, that picking of Nova,
If you go get issue 1 of Nova, I assume the trade will come out soon with the first arc that Geoff Johns wrote.
No, Jeff Loeb.
Jeff, yeah, my bad.
Well, they're friends. They're friends in real life, so it's fine.
They're both they're both bigwig TV dudes.
What about Iron Man, Ryan? Sort of similar, like there's kind of a cosmic
issue 1 would be
of it.
Issue 1 would be a great place to start. If you liked the movies, I think Kieran's got a great handle on Tony Stark as a character. And a lot of this arc has been about, let's put Tony outside his comfort zone in a zone he thinks he understands because he's a sci-fi nerd, like so many of us. And so let's put him in space where he thinks he can fulfill the sci-fi fantasies we all have, you know, Leia in the golden bikini. But it doesn't quite work out that way. So I think
also if you have any kind of cultural knowledge from the last, you know, 5 years, you know all the Marvel characters. They're all there. They've been in all the big movies. So they're not that much different than they are in the books. They're slightly different. Hawkeye would be pretty different. But, you know, for the most part, Thor's Thor, Iron Man is Iron Man. They're definitely gradually going more towards the movie characterizations anyway. So if you've seen those movies, then you've already know enough about the Marvel Universe to read the books, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be
have
fun
out there, man.
Let's try voicemail. Who's got a question about Heroes?
Hi, this is Patrick from Washington, North Carolina, and I'm verklempt. And I got a question for you guys to discuss. Who do you think is the heroic model that the New 52 should aspire to? Like back in old DC, it was Superman. But the Superman that is today, not so super heroic as much. My opinion, it's the Flash. But if you think of someone else, I'd just like to hear. Discuss amongst yourselves. Have a good day.
So this sort of harkens back to what Ryan is saying earlier in the show, and that he doesn't really know who Superman is. So what Patrick is saying is that he, you know, in the old DC, everyone looked up to Superman. Superman was the inspiration for all these characters, although really you went back to the Justice Society once you got into it. But really,
yeah, Superman was the
Superman was the inspiration in both in real life because he was the first real superhero, first popular one in the story. So, but he doesn't think that Superman in the new DC universe is the role model that he would be. And I'd have to agree with him because, you know, they went with a younger Superman, which is fine. So in that sense, he wouldn't really be a role model for the older characters. But he also doesn't act in the way that you would think people would gravitate towards him, even though they sort of try to write the whole world does that, but it doesn't really make sense. That's what Ryan was saying earlier.
Right.
So who is the character in the new DCU that would inspire a universe?
Who is the paragon of virtue? And it's tough because that's one of the sort of the themes, one of the motifs of the New 52 is this sort of paranoia about superheroes. And they're going sort of towards that thing of we need to build up organizations like the Justice League of America to combat the Justice League should they go rogue. And so we have to have all these countermeasures. And so I don't know. And you know, that first arc of Justice League is all of the characters are at each other's throats and they don't trust each other. I don't know if anyone...
I don't think there is one.
...rose out of that.
No, let's just say Aquaman.
Okay. You're going to say Aquaman?
I'm fine with that, but I mean, like...
Okay,
it's not
show your work.
It's not Wonder Woman, it's not Batman. Yeah. So why is it Aquaman?
Oh, no. I was saying Aquaman to be flippant, but you know, this question kind of reminded me of... there was an issue, it was a one-shot, I don't remember if it was Action or Superman or whatever, but it was Vito Del Sante's issue where Superman teamed up with Alan Scott.
It was an Action. No.
Yeah.
It was Action Comics?
Yeah, it was an Action
Comics,
okay, I believe, yeah. It was. No.
But it really emphasized Alan Scott and the Justice Society as the old guard and Superman as the second generation, the first of that second generation, but it kind of... diminished, and that sounds like a bad term, but it diminished Superman's importance in the inspiration of the heroic age of the DCU. But I really loved that issue because it showed Superman looking up to other heroes, and it showed that Martha Kent was really a big fan of the original Green Lantern Alan Scott, but that Superman was more of a fan of Starman. And I really liked that, and I liked that it was a hodgepodge and that different heroes, you know, if you consider Martha Kent a hero as well, were influenced by other heroes. There was no
generational
singular
thing
voice.
Yeah. Superman 676 is the issue we're talking about.
I really love that issue.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think there is one. You know, I don't think there is a character like that they have right now. I don't think it's Flash. I don't think Flash is central enough. Nor is he inspirational enough. Do you know what I mean? Like Superman is by definition sort of inspirational. What he can
do. I think they're trying to do like Cyborg is the heart, which is different. But in terms of who everybody
looks up to. It's also weird because he doesn't have one.
Right. But you know,
that's
irony.
The irony.
Oh, is that what irony means?
Yes.
I don't think there is one. I don't think there's a heart of the DC universe right now. Amongst many problems that it's got, I don't think there's a character who's the heart of the. I mean, not the heart, the inspiration. We just decided Cyborg was the heart. That's fine. Okay, let's move on.
Damon Wayne.
Damian Wayne is the heart. Paul, you want to read Alex from?
Sure. Alex from Woodland, California, aka Max Power. Did any of you ever have any comics or graphic novels assigned during high school and or college? I know I read Mouse for English in high school and have friends who studied Sandman in college, but those two seem to be it for the most part. Board of Education standards aside, are there any comics you think would be particularly apt for the classroom? I imagine several titles wouldn't make the cut due to mature content, i.e. all Garth Ennis material, no matter how educational the material may be.
And we have a professor with us on the show.
Oh, stop it. I'm not a professor. if it's I'll go ahead and say if it's college, there's no such thing as it being too mature because everyone's 18. So let's move past the idea that comics could be too mature for adults because everyone in college is technically an adult. I never had any comics assigned to me in high school. I did sign up for a composition course about comic writing, and it was not about learning to write comics. It was about learning to write critically about comics.
That was a class?
It was a fantastic class.
What would you possibly do with that class?
I wasn't asked to lecture.
Yeah.
It was, well, I actually did get to go back to this class a few years later, Paul, and give a guest lecture my experience writing for things like iFanboy. And how do you turn critical comics analysis into an actual job?
And, and you said you don't.
I said I enjoyed writing for iFanboy.
I don't think I never had a comic in the classroom. I don't think.
Would you like to hear the list for this
yes.
class?
Yes, go ahead.
It's all from memory. I don't have a list in front of me right now. It was Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics.
Okay. He did a lecture at my university when I was there, so. That counts.
Blankets.
Okay.
By Craig Thompson. Same Difference in Other Stories by Derek Kirk Kim. In the Shadow of No Towers by Art Spiegelman. What else was there? Persepolis, I believe we read Persepolis. So
all those books are good. I mean, there's a lot of interesting sort of mature themed books you could do in classes.
Well, I've also noticed. So my one of my best friends to this day, Jesse, wrote his final paper for the course about why Watchmen should have been included in the course.
I've heard of Watchmen being included in courses.
This course was specifically against. It was like about not using superhero comics, and Jesse basically said, "Here's why Watchmen is everything. It's the deconstruction of the superhero and a necessary inclusion."
Sure.
And it was a fantastic course, and I really enjoyed it. I wrote my paper on the books of the 1960s becoming the Silver Age, essentially going sci-fi in the wake of the Comics Code. That was my final paper on that.
Interesting.
That's cool.
Well, I never had Oh, you go ahead.
No, just I went to school for screenwriting, so we had a couple of classes that my various professors were all big comic fans. So we had to read a section, or I guess all of Judd Winnick's The Adventures of Barry Wienboy Genius.
Oh, nice.
I remember that early on. And I remember one of my professors, he was big on slideshows. What's it called? Microsoft PowerPoint presentations, and he had Hair Star from Preacher in one of them. It was like him freaking out at somebody and probably doing some kind of sexual damage to them in reference to doing something wrong in the class or like asking a dumb question. And Hair Star popped up on there, and I didn't know who he was at the time because I hadn't read Preacher. And then years later, I was like, "Oh, that's who that was." So there you go.
Well, I never had comics. I did have a class senior year called Children, Youth, and Mass Culture. And that was actually the class where Josh and Ron met over a cookie. actually, no, that was the class after that. Never mind. We did watch an episode of Batman the Animated Series, and I did write my final paper on that. So I never had a comic, but I did have a cartoon.
Well, and I also have one comment to kind of sum up this whole topic, because I was working on a column, and then the website got canceled. And the column was basically about I've been inhabiting university campuses since 2004 continuously. So my entire life has been, my job has been
just wandering being around.
You're Peter Venkman.
More or less, yes. Also with the funding issues. Right. So, but the thing I've noticed in going to university bookstores is that university bookstores will have a comic section. It's sometimes lumped in with like the Garfield books or whatever, but the books haven't really changed since 2004. It's still Persepolis. It's still In the Shadow of the Towers. They'll throw in Breakdowns, which is Art Spiegelman's latest book. Maybe a Walking Dead, maybe a Fables. But by and large, the comics on the shelves of the University bookstores have not changed. And I was thinking about that in relation to when Josh on the episode 400 mentioned that there haven't really been good graphic novels that have come out lately that have gotten people talking.
Yeah, that hasn't been a classic standalone.
I would say there's been good stuff that's come out that is worth talking about. They haven't caught on necessarily.
Well, I read some stuff recently, Paul. I tried to rectify that for the purpose of this show. Would you like, I can give a very, very brief run.
No, yeah, I definitely want to, if we have time, I'd like to just
real quick.
Like what our new classics are.
I read March.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The new book from Top Shelf.
That will probably make its way into classrooms.
That should, yeah.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I bet it will.
It was great.
Yeah, I agree.
I read Primates by Jim Ottaviani, who writes a ton of basically science documentary graphic novels. And this one was about Jane Goodall and other primatologists, female primatologists primarily, who have influenced the science of primatology over the past century. Also fantastic. And that was illustrated by Maris, I can't remember her last name, from Batman Black and White. And that was fantastic. I read A Matter of Life by Jeffrey Brown, which was like his autobiographical journey away from faith. Amazing. So there's still really great stuff out there. It's still actively being produced. It just seems like the conversation
been one that's captured the whole industry's imagination in a big way.
And I don't know.
The conversation has died down. And I mean, obviously, I gushed about Genius, the Steven Siegel, Teddy Christensen book on the site recently. And I just love that book as well. So there's still intellectual academic stuff coming out. We're not doing as good a job of talking
about I think that's a thing of the sort of like that community has sort of picked their things and they've latched onto them. And I think we should start looking for more things to add to Watchmen and Mouse and stuff like that. And I would say, not as recent, but Asterios Polyp. Asterios Polyp, there are things that Mazzucchelli does in that book that you can't do in other media. And it's a masterclass. So I would point to that one.
All right, let's get out of here. And one last voicemail. It's a very common sentiment this week.
Well, hey, gentlemen. This is Jeff in Bellingham, Washington. I just listened to episode 401, and damn if we didn't all maybe feel it was coming, but damn, that's sad, and I just had to say thank you guys so much. As soon as I graduated college last year, I quit my job at Barnes & Noble, where I've been working for 2 years and hated it, and I got a job at a comic book shop locally here, and it's my life and my love, and I would not have been able to do it without this podcast and you guys. So all four of you guys and all of the writers, I always wanted to call and I never did. And just thank you sincerely from the bottom of my heart. And and just I'll see you guys on the other side. I know it. Peace.
Jeff, is your shop hiring? So, I got nothing to do. I'm bored.
This was a crazy week for us. You know, we announced the scale back of the website in the last show, and it was a week of a lot of emotion. We heard a lot from a lot of people, a lot of feedback, a lot of things on the website. Honestly, didn't know what to expect, but it's been entirely positive. Not entirely positive, but mostly positive. A couple of people stuck their head out to take a couple of parting shots. That was to be expected. But we wanted just to thank everyone who called in. We had a couple of those voicemails. We just picked Jeff's to sort of encapsulate them all. We had a couple people who wrote in. We had a bunch of people who went to the website and left comments. And we wanted just to thank each and every one of you for doing that. It's been a crazy week, and we really appreciate everyone who said something nice.
Yeah, it's been really overwhelming. Connor replied to a lot of those messages, but there's so many of them, it's largely been very supportive, and that is I knew you guys were out there reading the stuff, and that meant a lot to me, and kept me typing. But just to see the outpouring, it's been pretty great. And I want to thank everybody who when there were some negative comments and some parting shots, stepped up. And I want to thank like the guys over at 11 O'Clock Comics who've been very supportive, and of course Chris and Jason have written for iFanboy in the past, and they have been great friends and great support over the years, and especially this past week. So thank you a lot, because that really means a lot to us.
Yes. Yeah, so the show continues on. So you'll just have to transfer all the energy here as we also figure out the new format of the show and the transitions, because that was clearly something I didn't even think about. And then we'll have to work on that for next week. It's our project for the week. why don't you guys tell us about your other shows you do? Ryan, you have a very popular show.
Do I?
I think so.
I don't know.
Probably better numbers than mine has.
It's all right. I'm proud. I'm proud.
Well,
it
should.
It
whatever. Just what's the show about?
I do a podcast called Science ... Sort of. It's a science podcast in a very casual way where we discuss the week's science news over a beer and we intersperse it with a movie trailer because we're nerds and we can't resist talking about those kind of things. I'm incredibly proud of the show. I think it's a really good product, and I think people, if you're interested in learning about the universe, it's a good place for you to find yourself. We have a bunch of affiliated shows at this point, so it's something I'm really proud of. The most recent episode was all about sharks. We were basically attacking Discovery Channel Shark Week. It's Jump the Shark Week on Science, sort of. A lot of fun.
Shark Week has sucked for years.
Well, we talk about that, Connor. We really do. We get into the nitty gritty of how has Shark Week fallen so far, and we have an actual shark scientist named Sora on the show talking about that. So we have good, legitimate information plus a lot of heartfelt opinions about what Shark Week has meant and how it has faltered in recent years. So a lot of fun and just we try to put out the absolute best. In terms of fun science content every week, and it's something I'm really proud of.
Where can people find that?
ScienceSortOf.com, or just search iTunes for Science Sort Of. It's pretty easy to snag with that search.
And Paul, you do a show called Breaking Bad, right?
I do a show called Fuzzy Typewriter, which is about stories, storytellers, art, and artists. And we usually, when we talk about books, we talk about movies, we talk about TV. And lately, we've been talking about all TV all the time. We've been doing Breaking Bad episodes with my new co-host for these shows, Rebecca Shinsky from Book Riot and Book Rageous and Food Riot. She's been fantastic, and we've been having so much fun. I'm really proud of these episodes on the final eight of Breaking Bad. There's only four left, so a lot of spoilers, but those are fun. And if you like Luther, BBC America spat all of them out in one week. And
that was bizarre.
Yeah, so you'll see two episodes in the feed. So if you look on iTunes for Fuzzy Typewriter, or if you just hit fuzzytypewriter.com, it'll redirect to my goofy little WordPress page.
Can I tell you something, Paul?
Yeah.
Because I did the Breaking Bad season 4 show.
Yes, you did.
And I was very proud of that show. I thought it was a very good show. I was a little disappointed I wasn't plucked for the season 5.
In the same way I did the Luther show originally.
But my point is, I've been immensely enjoying all the season 5 episodes. They're podcasts that I cherish till the moment when I finish the episode, and then I immediately start your episode because I need more.
I'm gonna have both of you guys on the show real soon. I'm sorry.
No. It wasn't meant as a dig. I'm trying to say that like I am loving the breakdown every week. I don't read any of the recaps. Your show is my go-to analysis for Breaking Bad.
Well,
it's
thank you
that
very
good.
Much. Well, enough patting ourselves on the back. Let's get to the outro.
Head over to ifanboy.com to come on to this show. You can find all of our other podcasts. We're going to be rolling out some new ones. We're in the early planning stages for our interesting Booksplode coming out soon.
Yes.
So you'll find all that at ifanboy.com. You can follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy, facebook.com/ifanboy.
But you can also email us, because some people are old-fashioned like that and they're not all about the social media. And that email address is contact@ifanboy.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail if you're even more old-fashioned. If even email is too newfangled for you, pick up your phone, dial 1-888-FANBOYS, that's 1-888-326-2697, and you can just pester us with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, or etc.
And if you're an auto dial machine, you can call us too and leave just no sound at all for 30 seconds, bastards.
29 seconds.
If you dig us, write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us, introduce your mom to podcasts, spread the iFanboy word. We're still out here on the airwaves.
We haven't gone anywhere. A lot of people say we're going to miss you guys. We haven't gone. We haven't A, died, or B, quit. We are still doing this show.
I mean, so. Josh is gone.
Josh is gone.
Josh is gone. He's done.
We're going to see how long you can buy the fact that he's just traveling. Yeah, he's
long live the reign of Ryan.
Oh, it's like when Coach died on Cheers, and they say, you know, he's at a family reunion, or he's visiting his sister.
You know, when John Stewart left for the summer and every episode is he was somewhere else, that's what it's going to be with Josh.
That's what it's going to be.
All right. So until next week, thank you for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Josh. That's what it said in the
script. What's it says?
It says I'm Josh.
Listen, you are the new Josh.